Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of Comaholics here on the Pop Culture Network at ineedcomics.com. And today, of course, I'm your host, Dirt, and I'm being joined by the Apocalypse, Eris Leopakis. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Now, you might have seen his name on the site a couple times before. He's done some reviews here and there of some of the comics. And today we're going to be taking a look at two trade paperbacks and an ongoing series. And we figure this is one of those shows we might do about once a month, I guess.
Yeah,
and here's the premise of the show. We've got beers. Let's clink. Yeah, clink our aluminum cans there. Mmm. And we've got comics. So we're going to get a little toasty, and we're going to talk about some comic books. That's the plan.
It sounds good to me. I think we should just go ahead and dive into A God Somewhere.
Okay, so the first trade paperback we have to talk about is A God Somewhere. This was sent to us by Wildstorm for review. And this is written actually by John Arcudi, who he does a BPRD, the Hellboy spinoff.
Oh, really?
Book, yeah. So, I mean, he does other things too, but I mean, that's a big thing probably most people are going to know him for nowadays. But so this was actually... It's sold as a graphic novel, a trade paperback, but it's actually, you could tell by reading it, that it was six issues. It was originally conceived to be a miniseries, and they've put it together here as a book. And tell me, what'd you think about A God Somewhere?
Well, you know, in the very beginning it was a little slow moving, but boy, when it really kicked off and all of a sudden he wakes up and he's got these godlike
powers. Well, let's
talk
a little bit, what's the premise of the book?
Well, the premise is an average Joe with his own, you know, normal life problems. There's an explosion in his apartment complex, and everyone around him is dead. I think there's like 100 bodies or whatever. And he ends up having all these superpowers, and immediately he knows there's something different about him. And then it just builds from there.
It's a very... realistic look at what it would be like to have superpowers. Like, it's...
Well, the reactions from the people. You know, all of his friends and how they come across with him, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that. There's also the stuff like he sneezes and blows out a wall of the apartment complex and a couple people die, you know, just because he's got a power he can't control.
Saying, yeah, it's very real. Like, there's no sugarcoating
right. The
effects of... him walking around with these godlike powers.
Like in a way, it reminds me of a classic Twilight episode or Outer Limits thing where you wish...
A what if?
Well, no, not so much a what if, but more like it's one of those things where be careful what you wish for.
Oh, sure.
Like, he gets superpowers. He can fly. He's invulnerable.
Well, and then the other part that I thought was really interesting was the religious part of it. You know, he was already fairly religious and a very Christian person before this happened. And because of it happening, you know, there's a couple flashbacks in a couple of the issues in the trade where you see him reflect his own thoughts of his own reality that aren't exactly what's going on.
Like, he loses his faith
right. By
becoming superpowered.
But in return, he makes himself a god.
Well, and the people around him, everyone else, they... Like, the story kind of flips. You think it's about one character, and then you kind of realize about halfway through it's actually about his friend.
Right.
And his friend actually becomes a little more introspective, and probably a little more spiritual, and a little more concerned about the human soul.
Yeah, they do a flip-flop. And actually, in the end, it leaves you to wonder, what did he give his friend? Did he give his friend, you know, superpowers in the end? You know, they kind of left that open.
I think the book is, well, no, I don't think he did. No. I think, like, to me, one of the things about the book is that it's very sad. Like, when I was done reading this book...
Oh, it's a tragedy, definitely.
Yeah, this is tragedy of the most epic proportions. Because the guy who gets superpowers, he ends up dead. His brother is a cripple.
Right.
The guy who's our lead character, he becomes a little more introspective and kind of has a different outlook on life. But
well,
he
let's
was,
not forget to mention
well,
that.
I was going to say, he was in love with the brother's wife.
Sure.
And so he has these dreams of having this perfect life with her and whatever. And, of course, she is stuck in this relationship with the guy who's the cripple, and she's unhappy. And so there are all these just really sad, tragic things that happen. But at the same time, I think it's one of these books that when you're done reading it, you feel like you've read something
that has
special.
Substance. It has substance.
Yeah, yeah, it has substance.
One thing I really like was the battle scenes.
When like versus the army?
When he's fighting the regular army people. I mean, it is brutal. There's a scene where, like, frame by frame, you see him, you see a guy on the radio, and he walks up with his foot, puts it on his head, and just squishes like a melon and
right.
walks off. I mean, it just shows at that point, and this is about the middle of the trade, that you know that there's no turning back for him.
Right.
You know, because I think as a reader, you know, at first I kind of want him to be the good guy. You know, I wanted to see him be, you know, that superhero, save the planet. But then as you read on, and he just becomes insane. He can't handle it. And, yeah, ultimately he ends up killing himself.
And the idea of the title is, of course, that he believes he's become a god. Like, he is a god now. Somewhere, you know, there might be other gods, whatever, but he believes that he has become God because he's all-powerful and all-knowing and unstoppable. And
well, he has a vision in here. I can't see it. I don't see it right now. Where he envisions himself as a god on this other alternate
right.
universe planet, and then it flashbacks to his reality. So I think, you know, his delusions were carried far beyond, you know, where, you know, even that the book could show. It's, you know, they left it up to your imagination, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah, definitely.
And there's never an explanation given.
No.
There's never any reason given. It's kind of like Night of the Living Dead.
Did he cause the explosion to begin with?
Yeah.
You
know? Or did something happen
right.
to him and, you know, it centered on him and so he survived and everyone else died? I mean, you don't really know why it happened, how it happened.
Which is interesting because the title is a god somewhere, you know, and it makes you think, you know, is the ultimate purpose of this book to, you know, say there is no god?
Well, or did God cause this to happen so that our lead character mm-hmm. would find a change in his outlook on life?
Boy, that's a lot of sacrifice just for one person to find some change.
You know, hey.
Yeah.
Everything happens for a reason, right? I think also, for me, it really feels like... This felt like a movie, like epic.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, it's like you see him go through these changes. It's like his odyssey. You know, there's the parts where, you know, the god anti-superhero is just covered in blood and guts for about, you know, the last third of the book, you know. And it's like, that's his transformation.
Yeah, I was going to say, the book has a very nice build-up, where, like you said, the first issue starts out kind of slow, mm-hmm. where it's introducing the characters, it's setting up the situations, the relationships, you're understanding where they're coming from, why they're all friends.
And at first,
Because one of the things is, it's these two brothers and their black friend. I mean, and that is literally what it is. It's and they even discuss that that's who they are. They refer to themselves in that sense. It's like, I'm the random black friend of these two white guys.
Well, and they made it, there's a lot of, in the very beginning, they show a lot of them defending their black friend. He gets picked on.
Like in high
school.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yeah, and so it's you have this interesting relationship between them where they have that, you know, that one black
right.
friend, and the black friend, and the relationships he has with the mm-hmm. people around him, where, you know, like, the other black guys at work make fun of him because he's hanging out with the white boys
sure,
all the time,
yeah.
you know, all that kind of stuff. So in that sense, it's a very realistic view of actual people. And then, you know, to take it a step further, then once all the powers come, you kind of have this feeling of he felt like a little bit of the outsider.
Right.
Like, the other black guys at work didn't treat him like he was an equal. They treated him like he was, you know, something else.
Completely different.
Right. But then these, you know, the two brothers always treated him like he was just another guy. But then after the younger brother gets his powers, then suddenly it's like the relationships kind of shift. Because it talks in the beginning that the older brother, the younger brother have kind of a strained relationship. And then when the powers, you know, come, the older brother really wants to reconnect and really wants to make,
right,
you know, that connection with his younger brother.
And they make it seem like it's as shallow as the fact that they're just, there's this struggle over the girl, you know. But in reality, that's not it at all.
Right, right. And everybody's in love with the wife.
Even the black guy's in love.
And I mean, hey, she's drawn pretty hot. She's hot, you know, I'd go for her. Sure, why not? Why not? So let's see. Wait, let me check this out for a second. This is a $24.99 trade paperback. So, you know, sometimes trade paperbacks hit you. They're $15, they're $18. What do you think for $24.99?
Oh, I'd buy it. I'd buy it.
You would for quarter, most definitely. Quarter C note?
No, it was a great read. I read it actually on a Sunday afternoon. Flew right through it. It was one of those that was kind of hard to put down, which is, you know, that's a great sign for me, you know.
I actually read it twice. Because I read it once, it was one of those things where I started reading it and something happened, interrupted me. I didn't get back to it for a couple days. So then I read some more and then I set it down and I came back to it, read some more. And then after I was done with it, I kind of felt like it would flow better if I did read it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, for me, it kind of has that movie effect where you really, if you sit down,
you don't want to stop.
You really absorb it all at once. It's all one big experience to read through. And I really, once I read it the second time and just read it straight through, I really felt like it felt even stronger to me the second time. You know, usually you read something the second time and it's like, oh, you know, I'm already familiar with that part. You kind of, you know, gloss over. But on this one, it seemed a little...
The art looks familiar. What other work is...
Well, okay, that's the other thing I was thinking about here. The artist is Peter... Snelgenborg, Smorgasbord. I hate to, you know, it's Nordic, some kind, Icelandic. Snejbjerg, and I'm actually not familiar with anything else. Did you ever read Why the Last Man?
No.
Okay, because to me it looks like the artwork from that series. It's clean.
Yeah,
it's
very clean. Helped with the darkness of the storyline.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's very clean, but it's it feels organic. It feels kind of soft, and it feels kind of I hate to use this term, but squishy. Squishy is the word that comes to mind.
What do you mean by squishy?
There's a lot of entrails and smoke and blood.
Sure. Okay,
but it's not dirty. Like, a lot of times when people do
literally squishy.
Like when people do smoke, a lot of times they'll scribble or, you know, draw a whole bunch of lines. Okay. And this is one of those where you get those solid black areas and then those lighter areas.
Sure.
And it's just got that nice, clean feel to it, even when a lot of the most disgusting, you know, when entrails are laying all over the place.
Oh, yeah, he's got guts hanging all over his dreadlocks.
Right. And it's also one where I think he does a very good job of laying out his whites and blacks.
Well, you know, going back to the character, I know we're skipping around here, but I was just, this thought came to me. One thing I was really intrigued with was supposedly he had all these telekinetic powers, and that was dictating, you know, what he could do.
Like he could force people to do certain things.
But they didn't really explore that. Like, they talked about it. They're like, okay, we're figuring him out. We know his weakness. We're going to kill him. You know.
It also jumps ahead in time a little bit.
Right.
Where he kind of runs off and disappears, and then you see him later.
He's
got long
hair.
They
could have made this like a 24-issue, you know, book, I feel. You know?
Yeah,
they really
could
have stretched it out.
Yeah, there's definitely a chunk of time in the middle that they just kind of gloss over in order to get to this ending. And I don't know if that was... Like I said, you could tell it starts out as a series that they put together as a book, and I don't know if maybe it was going to be something bigger, and they decided to wrap it up, or, you know, I don't know, but... I really did.
That part's easy to forgive, though, because it is a good read,
and it's scary.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those. Like,
it makes you feel creepy.
Well, I really, after the brother, more or less gets destroyed.
Right.
Then you've got, you know, the friend.
I would say that's the climax of the book, when he finally breaks. You know, sure, he killed all these people and, you know, all these soldiers, but when he maimed his brother and raped his wife, that's when it was like, okay, there's no return for this guy.
But, I don't even know what I was going to say. Thanks for interrupting.
No problem.
We were
talking about the artwork and the flow and the fact that we felt that probably they could have added.
Oh yeah, here's what I was going to add. It's like when you watch a movie like The Hangover or Superbad, mm-hmm. or something. Those are funny movies, but I'm going to use that to draw this illustration. Is that when you get to the end of the movie, there's a point where it's the next morning. You know, where it's like the sun comes up. It's like they're shaving, they're getting cleaned up, they're getting ready to, you know, do whatever. And you can tell that the hard part is behind them, in a sense, because they've survived all of this awful stuff that's happened to them.
I think a classic example, if we're going to talk about movies, is Pineapple Express.
When they're sitting in the diner. Breakfast table. Yeah. They're sitting in that diner eating eggs.
Their buddy with the Daewoo is half dead.
Yeah. And they're bleeding all over the place, and they're joking about it. It's got that feeling at the end, but not comedically,
right?
In a serious way, but it's got that feeling at the end where he's moved on,
right?
He's further in his life down the line, and in a sense, you kind of get the feeling like he survived all that tragedy. He's gone through that hard part, but in a sense, the hardest part is yet to come because now he's going to move on with his life.
Right.
He's got to find some way to put this behind him and step forward and rediscover himself, not in terms of the guy whose best friend got superpowers and killed 1,000 soldiers, you know, when he's got to take his life out of the direction. So
yeah, I don't know how you carry on after that. But
yeah, it was a good book. Like I said, I've read it a couple times, and this is one of those things that if I was probably going to take a trip somewhere, like I knew I was going to be on an airplane, or I was going to have a couple hours to kill in a hotel, I'd probably take this along to read.
Well, I've already recommended it to a couple friends.
Yeah. This is also a good one to share with other people.
Sure. And you know, let's also discuss this. You know, the whole reason why we're doing Comiholics is we're trying to talk about stuff that's off the cuff. You know, stuff you don't normally pick up off the rack. You know.
Right. And like I said, this is from Wildstorm. And they are part of DC Comics. So, in a sense, this is coming from a big publisher. But at the same time, Wildstorm, being an imprint of DC, they're allowed to do things. You know, Vertigo does some mature stuff. And they're able... Here comes the dog. Hey, there's a dog sniffing my crotch. Hello, dog. We're gonna pause the show here for just a second.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to popculturenetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else, from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Took a little break there in order to take care of some business, but now we're back, and we're here to talk about our second trade paperback, and this is The Authority, The Lost Year. This is another one from Wildstorm. This was sent to us for review. We have to disclose that. when they send us the stuff, we have to let people know that it was sent to us.
Well, I'll give them credit if they want me to read.
Well, no, it's one of those things where if we really like it and we say, oh, it's great, it's wonderful, and we don't say that they sent it to us, then we can get in trouble.
Oh, well,
because then it sounds like we're, you know, trying to shill for them. So yeah, in the purpose of full disclosure, another review copy that they sent to us, and I thought it was
dirty. Full disclosure.
Well, it depends on, I guess, what all we're disclosing. I mean, you got any secrets?
No, I might.
Want to play Truth or Dare real quick?
Depends on how many beers we have tonight. Mm.
So, first of all, The Authority. For anyone not familiar with The Authority is a superhero team from Wildstorm. Basically, a group of superheroes who decided, eventually, that they had superpowers. They were better than the average person, so therefore they were going to fix the world. They were just going to take it over, and if someone did something wrong, they were going to take care of it themselves.
Are you familiar more with the storyline of the whole mothership and how they ended up with all that?
No, not necessarily. Okay. But I don't think... That's something I was going to say here, so I guess we'll go ahead and jump into this part of it. I felt that I wasn't real familiar with The Authority. Like, I'd read little pieces sure. here and there, but it wasn't something I regularly followed. But I felt like this story, it did a fine job of kind of giving you a sense of the relationships with the characters, and it did a fine job of, you know, there's something weird about the ship. You don't really know what it is, mm-hmm. but you know there's something else there that's going on. And you also kind of know that they've been displaced. This lost year, whatever that story arc is, they've somehow been displaced and they're trying to get back to their Earth.
Sure.
So there's something called the Bleed mm-hmm. that they're traveling through, and as they pop in and out of the Bleed, they're
well,
popping into different...
Well, it's like the ship is a trans-dimensional...
Transporter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're as they travel the Bleed and pop in and out, they're popping into different realities, different sure. parallel universes, basically. And they're just trying to find their way back home and figure out how to get back to... You know, the real world, quote unquote.
I like the very beginning.
Okay.
So, I really like the very beginning of
okay,
it.
First of all, this is a collection of issues.
Sure.
So, you know, this is the first however many issues. I want to say it was 6 issues.
It's a lot. It's a pretty thick book.
And so it's not the whole story. We got volume 1.
Right.
Okay, so this is the opening of the story. This isn't the whole thing. And... Like we said, some stuff had happened beforehand, some stuff happens after, so this is, you know, just a section of the story. But the individual issues, it's kind of interesting, because the story was originally written by Grant Morrison, okay? And Grant Morrison is a guy, he's a writer who's become very big. He did some X-Men stuff, and then he went to DC. He's been doing some Batman stuff. He did Infinite Crisis and some of those big... Or Final Crisis, I guess it was. And he's a very unusual writer, and he tackles things in a different way that a lot of people wouldn't normally think about doing.
Well, I think you see that frame by frame.
Yeah, but he did the first 2 issues, and then he got caught up doing other stuff, like Final Crisis and sure. whatever, and he had a hard time. I think he was working on 52, which was a weekly series, and all this kind of stuff. So he had a hard time like getting back to The Authority. So after it sat for a long time... they eventually decided they were going to bring in a different writer and a group of different artists and have them kind of rotate and finish off the storyline.
Oh, okay.
So Grant Morrison did the first 2 issues and then left, but he still kind of sat down with the writer.
He led the way.
Yeah, Keith Giffen, who came in, and he kind of said, okay, well, this is kind of what I had in mind, and plotted out, you know, where the story would go. And then the other guy, Keith Giffen, came in and... did the rest of it.
Well, it makes sense, because I felt at the beginning it kind of set the stage. It was like entering the Twilight Zone. Like when they go down in the little submarine and they're shining the light out on the big submarine, and
okay,
all of a
yeah.
sudden you see this huge
let's
mothership.
Start out. The story starts out with the humans. And the humans...
On the alternate Earth.
Well, these humans, there's some sort of disturbance underwater. The submarine, there was a... nuclear-powered submarine that disappeared. They're not sure what it is. So they're calling these people in to check it out. And they find the Authority ship at the bottom of the ocean. So they're going in to investigate. The Authority, you know, snatches a couple guys, brings them on board, tries to explain to them what's going on, tries to see if these guys know a way to help them out. And this world in which these regular humans live There are no superheroes. So at first it looks like our Earth. So that was my initial thought. It's like, oh, it's our... They went from superhero Earth to regular our Earth.
Well, and the superhero with the telekinetic powers was able to recognize right away that, you know, he kept describing the world as like dead or...
You mean telepathic?
Yeah, telepathic. I say telekinetic. Yeah. Telepathic. And, you know, that the world was kind of numb. Like it was, you know, stuck
like
in
half
neutral.
Asleep.
Half
right.
asleep. There you go.
And they figured out there's some giant alien life form that you can't really see, you can't really feel, but it's attached to every living person, every living being, animals included.
It was like apparently. A massive amoeba covering the Earth.
Yeah, and it's just sucking their life force.
Sure.
And so they're all interconnected with each other. And the Authority realizes the only way they're going to escape is by bringing this guy into the ship, having them go through this.
Also, they determined that their presence was making things worse.
Right, their presence too. was waking this thing up.
Right,
and as this thing's waking up, people are getting more aggressive. They're getting angrier, and it's causing a lot of problems. And they realize the only way to get out of here is to take this guy, hook him up to this machine, run energy through him, and use him as some sort of nexus in order to break out from this reality.
Did you notice they never actually said you're gonna die if you do this?
Well, they said there's a possibility. They said there's a possibility you might die.
The willingness of him to jump into that, I found was just...
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, they set up the storyline where the guy is... He and his wife are having marital problems.
Right.
He hates this job that he's doing, but he has to do it because he says there's no one else to do it, so he feels the burden of being this government operative. He really just, you know... And the world around him, the world is terrible. You know, it's basically a world with no checks and balances. People in a
apathy.
Grocery store.
Everybody's apathetic.
Or angry.
Or angry, yeah.
Yeah. And they're beating each other up and, you know, whatever. And so
because of this thing.
Right. And so they say, you know, there's the possibility that you might die, but they don't tell him that there's also a possibility it may kill every living thing on Earth because of this giant thing that's sucking everybody's life force energy.
And so that's at the end of that, because basically it kind of, you know, this is a stretch, but it was kind of Star Trek like the way they went from like one social problem to the next, because you start off with they're at this alternate Earth and everything is going on there, and in the end, yes, the guy sacrifices his life for the good of everybody on his planet. And then they get stuck into the bleed. And then from the bleed, they go on to the next
alternate universe,
which is basically their planet, where there's an equal authority present, but yet the path that they chose is completely different than the original authority
right.
chose.
And there's also a story in the middle where there are these parasites in the bleed attacking the ship.
Oh, I know. I was going with the Star Trek thing. Was they had this like code? They had this code about, you know, how they would interfere with all the different interdimensional,
like the Prime Directive.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem for me with this book is that I really enjoyed the first story. Mm-hmm. I thought the story was good. I thought the artwork was good. And then the next story, the transitional story with the parasites attacking the ship, just didn't feel that strong to me. I just really couldn't bring myself to care that much about,
right.
like, okay, they're parasites and they have to shoot them off. Like, it went from this yeah. deep story, this guy sacrificing himself.
Right. Apollo, you know, bursts out of the ship, you know.
And he just starts shooting stuff.
And they left the door open.
Oh, no, now they're climbing all over the ship and we gotta get them out of the
cannon. Yeah, that was a little weak. Yeah, it was... Yeah, there was a little turn there. Like when they were in the bleed, they could have taken that whole section out and just said, "Bam! Now we're on this alternate planet that's
right.
just like ours," and I would have been comfortable with that.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I would have enjoyed skipping that story, and I didn't feel like the artwork was that strong in that storyline either. It went from this very classic art, comic book art type style, and then. That filler issue with the parasites, it was like a very soft, penciled...
Sure.
It looked very watercolor-ish and very...
Like you're looking through stained glass, is what it looked like.
And it just, like to me, it was such an abrupt change And I was just like, it just kind of killed the mood for me. Like, I really loved that first story.
Do you think what they were trying to go for was showing that, okay, now you're in a different segment?
Well, like I said, it was because of the whole, the series stalled, mm-hmm. and then they brought in a new writer okay. and a bunch of new artists. Just
so it was like the Foggy Haze transition into...
Yeah, well, it's like who's available? Okay, yeah, you. Okay. Now you're drawing this, right. this book. And it, to me...
It would be interesting to see if the original writer could have done the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that was just like they felt like they needed to put something in there to buffer between these different sure. universes. But if that issue, like if I was sitting down and reading those issues, I had the stack of issues, and I was going to read this again a second time, I would pull that issue out and put it back in the box.
Yeah.
I don't care about the parasites. I don't care about yeah. them eating the ship. I didn't care anything about that book. I'll read the first story, watch the guy sacrifice himself, watch everybody on the planet die, and then I'll go to the next story when they're in the next universe.
With the evil Midnighter. The next story, I like the last story.
I don't know. The Midnighter was evil in the next story, but
well, he did a lot. He did a lot more bad than the original.
But the next part of the arc is the alternate universe, where it's very similar to the Justice League stories, where you had Justice League and Justice Society meeting each other, and then there's the Crime Syndicate, where it's the evil Superman and the evil Wonder Woman, you know, evil Batman, all that kind of stuff. There's an authority on this planet. They took over. And instead of it being like the authority themselves, they're hands-off superheroes who get hands-on. So it's like they kind of sit back and watch, and it's when a war breaks out, they go down, they break it up. You're not fighting anymore. We're taking care of this. It's done. It's over. And then they retreat back.
It's like they're acting like they're kings and queens. You know, like they're the...
Wait, which ones?
The alternate.
The alternate universe. Yes. Yeah. Because then what happens is when they have a disagreement about how things should run, then they basically get into a fight with each other, mm-hmm. and they split the country into different parts, and this part's mine, which is because I'm all about science, and this part's mine because I'm all about magic. And, right. you know, then they fight with each other, and Midnighter is the Unabomber, just kind
yeah.
of lonely out in the woods in the mountains somewhere. And
Hiding.
In a van down yeah, by the river. And
did you notice that, like, he had kind of like the North Ender ghetto version of the Midnighter outfit? Like, he had the torn sleeves, you know?
All right, now explain what that means, the North Ender.
Okay, I apologize. This would be the North End of Springfield I'm referring to here, which is where we're
Springfield,
located.
Springfield, Illinois, yes. where we're headquartered.
Yeah, you know, I'm talking, you know, Z-28s with different colored door panels, fair-going type. Nothing against fair-going type, because I live near the fair and I like to go there. But, you know, I digress. But you know, it seemed like he was like the trashy version.
Well, I mean, when you're a guy who's in control and you need a new outfit, you're just going to go to somebody and say, "Make me a new outfit," and right. they're going to make it.
But he wasn't the guy in control.
But he wasn't that guy in control anymore. So
it was like shirt, he was in exile.
Well, yeah, it's like his shirt got ripped. Well, now I got a ripped shirt. There's nothing you can do but keep wearing it. You know. So that's really what he was. Now this brought up, I thought, the most confusing part of the story, like not being that familiar with the authority, there's something going on. There's some girl on the team who is Midnighter's daughter.
Yes. All right, the chain smoking daughter.
Well, and there's something weird about her where every 100 years she dies and is reborn.
I thought it was she gets old, but she never dies.
But then she becomes a baby.
She made herself young again. I'm confused.
I don't really understand that. That wasn't explained, and I'm sure that's one of those things that
there was a comment from another superhero that, you know, she looks so young, and why did she choose such a young body or something like that.
Yeah, and so I'm not really sure what the deal was with that.
Well,
but
I got to be honest with you. I was hoping that reading The Lost Year would be a nice jump into the authority,
and it
really wasn't.
No.
No, not at all. I mean, I have more questions now than if I would have just left the book on the coffee table.
Yeah, and that's not to say that the first story and the last story aren't enjoyable in their own right, but as like an ongoing series, I didn't necessarily feel like now I have to get volume 2 because I read volume 1. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, well, that was interesting, but I don't really feel like I'm at a point now where I want to pick up the series.
I'm not dying to find out what happens next.
No.
And the other part, you know, talking about the artwork, we were going back to that. There's these parts where they try to make it look shaky, like there's a lot of motion going on in the frames, And it doesn't flow well at all, in my opinion.
Like, they use the computer to blur
right.
it.
Right, yeah, and it just doesn't cut well to the next scene. And I found that a little frustrating.
It kind of pulled you out a little bit. Because everything is hand-drawn, and then suddenly there's this computer effect.
Well, it's like you gotta, like, pull the book back and look at the whole page again. Mm. You know, you gotta zoom out and try to absorb what the heck is going on here between the frames, but...
I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. But again, that's also one of the deals with the series is that it switched artists.
Yeah.
You know, going through, so you're going to get some different art styles and different ways of approaching the story throughout. And to me, I think maybe that was another problem I kind of felt was it didn't really feel like the stories were kind of disjointed. The artwork being disjointed as well just kind of felt more like it was a collection of stuff that happened.
A collage.
It's like, yeah, they're traveling and they're mm-hmm. jumping through the different universes, but it didn't really feel like it flowed from one story to the next story to the next. Like, they could have done the alternate universe first, mm-hmm. and then the parasites, and then the world that's all being sucked dry.
And you wouldn't have noticed the difference.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have made that big of a deal. So, yeah, so there was that aspect to it. So definitely some problems with Authority of the Lost Year, Volume 1. Not as big a fan as A God Somewhere.
No, and, you know, I did read The Authority twice. I did try a second shot at it. And yeah, I mean, would I recommend it? Probably not.
No. Well, you know, not every book's a winner. You know? I mean, you gotta be honest here. You know, some books we enjoyed and some books just not as good. So, I'm sure there are plenty of Authority fans out there willing to disagree with us. And feel free to give us a call. Area code 217-953-4025 is our 24-hour voicemail line. Call anytime, day or night. Leave us a voicemail. So,
I'll be waiting by the phone.
All right. Having said that, we're going to take our next commercial break. But then when we come back from this set of commercials, we're going to talk about a series that I think we both...
Oh, I'm very excited
we
about
We both adore, and I think pretty much anybody listening to this, if they haven't picked up the series, I don't understand what's stopping
what
them.
What planet are you on? Crawl out of the rock.
Although, to be fair, you didn't start reading it until about 3 months ago.
You're right.
So, when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead, soon to be a TV series on AMC. All right, so we'll be right back, folks. We're going to get a freshie out of the fridge.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the green teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at PopCultureNetwork.com.
Check out www.LockerRoomHQ.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.PopCultureNetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on Comaholics, and I don't know if you can hear the dogs barking outside. Maybe you've heard the crickets earlier. We are actually out in Eris's garage, and in his garage, there's actually a bar, a full bar. He has a full wooden bar that was rescued from the remodeling of an actual bar here in town. He's got a fridge that has been made into a kegerator. And the taps on the bar actually work when he's, you know, got homebrew hooked up to it. But in his garage, there are the beer signs, there's the Christmas lights, there's the TV in the corner that's usually on sports. And
or Family Guy.
You can't win them all. And if you heard those dogs barking a minute ago, that's because Eris was actually out doing the bar in the garage thing of peeing on the side of the garage outside, which was making the neighborhood dogs angry. You have angered the the neighborhood dogs.
They'll be okay. They'll be okay.
Which, by the way, I've noticed you're wearing your new shirt.
Yeah, my new Flash shirt.
I'm is that for this episode, or are you just having to wear it today?
Well, actually, it's the first day I've worn it. Yes, it is. Yes and no. That is a coincidence. Oh, yes, okay. I'll take it as that. Sure.
Yeah, he bought a new... He's okay, let's talk a little bit. Your foray into comic books started, like, what, maybe a year ago at the most?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's turned into an obsession really quickly. I started out with... I bought a Star Wars Legacy issue. I was recommended by a friend. He's like, check it out. Wasn't, like, exceptionally...
Because you are a Star Wars fan.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, yeah. I mean, and it was good. It was okay. But I didn't feel it was a very good jumping point into it.
Right.
And I really wanted to jump into something and sink my teeth into it. And then you had recommended Dark Wolverine.
Right. Because it had just turned to Dark Wolverine. It had just gone from Wolverine to Dark Wolverine with all of the Dark Reign stuff that was going on. Yeah. And so I felt that was a good jumping on point for a character there.
And it snowballed from there rather quickly. It started with a couple titles, and I think I'm up to, like, what, 25, maybe?
Something like that. And you've now been allowed to buy... Is this your second comic book t-shirt that you've been allowed to order?
Yeah.
So you've got a Deadpool shirt and a Flash shirt.
Yeah.
So
I'm showing that diversity there, you know.
Two comic book shirts.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty much strictly Marvel for a long time,
and then you started branching into DC a little
bit.
Yeah,
I jumped into DC, and...
And Flash is a good book.
Yeah, I like Flash.
I love Flash. All right, but we're actually here to talk about a different series we said we were going to be discussing today. And that is, in fact, the upcoming soon-to-be TV series on AMC, The Walking Dead, by Robert Kirkman. And he originally started the series with Tony Moore as an artist, but then Tony Moore got some job offers from Marvel.
How many issues did
Tony Moore do? I want to say 10 or 12.
Okay. Well, it was great because that's what got me hooked.
And then Charlie Adler came in after Tony Moore left, and he's been with it ever since. And for most people, if they've been around comics for a while, they think of Charlie Adler. His big series before this that most people think of was, in fact, the X-Files. He did an X-Files comic book for several years for Topps Comics before they went out of business. And so he's used to that, horror, dark type style from doing the X-Files comics, and so they brought him in, and he's a really good black and white artist, and there are a lot of guys nowadays
the
that are not good
exceptional.
There are a lot of guys not good with black and white because they really rely on the colorist to add a lot of shape and depth.
You get used to the fact that it's black and white, and in fact it's so the depth is so detailed in the black and white shades that You would in your mind you see color.
Yeah, I've caught myself doing that. Probably because the covers are color,
right?
So you do see splashes of color, with it. So when I think back on the book, I usually think of the book as in color.
If my thoughts were the fact that they did black and white was, it kind of has that original Night of the Living Dead feel.
Yeah, it is a zombie book,
right?
Yeah, so it does have a little bit of that. It's also The book itself is structured in such a way that he does these different, like, it's not really in arcs, like story arcs, like you traditionally think in comics, but there are clusters within the story. They're traveling.
There's a mini-series or two in there.
Isolated neighborhood. Then everything goes wrong, so then they're traveling. Then they're in the prison for a long time. Then they have the story with the governor. And then they're traveling again because all that goes wrong. Then the hunters. And then now the new neighborhood
that they're
congressman. Yeah, so they're traveling, they're moving. It's really a book about the journey, how do things continue after that? And it's also a book that it doesn't focus just on, hey, we're being attacked by zombies, fighting off zombies.
No, there's a lot of drama involved.
You'll go like two or three issues sometimes, and maybe there's one or two zombies.
Right.
And it's really about them struggling and trying to.
But it seems like every time they bring the zombies back in, it's intense.
Yeah, it gets pretty.
They're running into a horde, or there's like a group of roamers that catch them off guard. Somebody's gonna die.
Right, and it's one of those things where Rick, who's our hero, our protagonist, he's gone through a lot. He's gone through, and there are times when I thought he wasn't going to survive, where I thought, well, you know, Kirkman's going to kill him off and someone else right. is going to be the focus of the book.
Well, they start building characters where you start to think, well, you know what, if they killed Rick, they've got Abraham, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, where are they going to go from there? I felt that the longer that it kept getting drawn out, your interests change. With the characters, obviously, because they die off on you.
Right.
You know, you fall in love with a character, or you really start to enjoy the direction they're going with a character, and then his brains get eaten.
Right.
Or, you know, he kills himself.
All right, so it started out around Atlanta, with basically them trying to escape, get out of the city, meet back together, try to figure out.
From the very beginning, Rick is in a coma. In the hospital.
Right.
It's very 28 days later.
Yeah, I was just going to say 28 days later.
The very beginning.
Right. And then he wakes up. He's trying to reconnect, find his wife, find his son, find his friend Shane, mm-hmm. try to reconnect with them, which, of course, this is going to be the focus of the first season of the TV show. So your first trade paperback or so is, you know, going to be your first season of the show, more than likely. And I kind of felt like in those early issues where...
They were building the shock factor, I thought.
Well, I kind of felt like it was a little unfocused, I have to say, where they're not in the city, right? Okay, so they're not...
They're on the outskirts of the
city. Right, they're on the outskirts of the city, but I kind of felt like if you're a major metropolitan area like Atlanta, a lot of suburbs, there have been people living there... You know, 400 years, I guess, you know, colonies and, mm-hmm. you know, people moving through plantations and all that kind of stuff. So it's like if zombies are coming back, if the dead are coming back to life, that's not going to be an area where you're going to find a lot of open spaces to get away from corpses, mm-hmm. to get away from history, to get away from people, you know? And I kind of felt like he picked kind of the wrong area to start. He should have started somewhere more Midwest or the plains where there's...
Well, there'd
be
a chance to get out, maybe.
Yeah, where it's a little less civilization, whereas opposed to, you know, being around this.
Well, I think we need to paint the picture here because you got to realize basically what's happening here is you're talking all out chaos, complete anarchy.
Right.
It's the zombies and maybe a few humans that are not zombies, and that's it. You know, there's complete breakdown in society. There's no power. There's no running water. Cars are abandoned everywhere. It's like, you know, there was a nuclear holocaust,
right,
basically.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the picture that he's painting. And I agree with you. It probably would have been a little easier to build characters if they didn't have to run away right away from the outskirts of Atlanta and, you know, and then carry on from there. It right. was like almost like I almost would have liked it better if it would have started out in like a rural farm or something.
And or then, a small town. Like, what I was thinking more was just, like, small town of, like, 400, 500 people, mm-hmm. kind of out on the prairie,
you know. Very close-knit.
Right, right. Where it's like they're instantly going to start, you know, like, well, I've got to run over to the Johnson's farm and see if everything's all right. You know what I mean? And it's like, old man Johnson just came out of the ground.
Oh, no, Billy Ray. Not Billy Ray.
But I kind of felt like that would have been a better start.
And then
they
could do, like, a whole shoot old Yeller out behind the barn kind of thing.
Right.
Too,
but still, all of those issues aside, though, it starts out, you know, with them trying to rebuild, trying to find a place where they can go and be safe. And the first place they find is kind of this closed off neighborhood, kind of the walled you know neighborhood, and they set up shop there. They you know find each other some houses. They figure out they think that they're going to be safe there for a while, and then of course it doesn't last.
No, and I like the way they build it up, where they make you feel like this is where they're going to go with it. They're going to start a community here,
and I think. It helps to kind of set this tone where you think it's a community, it's a neighborhood that has walls around it, it has a gate, it's got what you're looking for to be safe. It's got food. Houses have food. They have canned pantries, you know, preserves in jars. You've got stuff to keep you for a while. And it gives you that feeling of being safe. Now I found a home. Now I found a place I can settle down. Now I found, you know, a way to just live a somewhat normal life again, despite all the terrible things that are going on in the world around you. And, of course, he does that so that once you think it's safe and they're going to have a normal life again, then, boom, zombies come in, start chewing up people's faces. They have to get in the cars. They have to get the heck out of there.
Well, what I like about Rick, too, about his character, is he is the apprehensive leader. He doesn't want to be the leader. He's just... he's the only one that's willing to make the decisions.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, if you look at, say, someone like George Washington. George Washington didn't want to be president. He didn't want to be a general in the army. He just wanted to be a farmer. He just wanted to, well, not a farmer necessarily, but he just wanted to be a guy, do his thing, leave him alone. And people kept, you know, coming back to him. And there was even one point after the United States had been established, he was no longer president, he left, and the people who followed behind him had a hard time keeping the country together. And they came back to Washington. They were like, we need you to come and sit down and talk to everybody, kind of hammer out these issues. And he said, I've done enough. I don't want to do this anymore. And that's Rick. Rick is very much this guy who, he doesn't want to be the leader. He doesn't want to be the guy in charge. He doesn't want to make the decisions. He doesn't want lives in his hands where he's responsible whether or not people live or die.
Well, that's the great tragedy about his character. Because
and there's no one else to do it.
Yeah.
Man, I just... tried to breathe beer and that doesn't work very well.
I know, I can tell, I can smell it from here.
All right, but so then after that they have another period where they're traveling, picking up more people, finding people along the way, adding them on. And
who are your favorite character additions?
Well, I think the obvious one is, I don't even know how to pronounce her name. Michonne?
Yes.
Michonne? Mechanon?
The samurai sword.
Megatron? Whatever.
Previous lawyer in a previous life.
She is...
And what was it? Like, she had, like, she took fencing classes or something before zombies came?
So she kind of knew how to swing a sword around, and really all you have to know is how to chop their heads off.
Right, just top.
So all she really needs to know is one move, and that's the slash right across the neck. That's the only move that she needs to know.
And she's great at it.
And you never run out of bullets that way.
No.
And they're slow, and they're weak. And she had two of them that somehow she had tamed. And
yes,
she had chained to
herself.
That's
how it all started. That's how she showed up. And you know what? They let that go. They let that whole part go. They didn't even, like, dive into why she had these two zombies chained.
Well, I think she had them, in a sense, to be, like, her guides. Like, if you're going to find other people, you're going to use the zombies. Because they're going to sniff out the other people.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
So that's how she's going to find
other
people.
They're her bloodhounds.
Yeah, exactly. But how she tamed them, I don't know if they even... I mean, granted, that was part of the storyline that was like 3 years ago or whatever it was. So,
well, and that's the other thing. The only one, and I guess we'll find out the more we read, but I think one of the flaws, if there were, because I love this series, don't get me wrong, was that the methodology of what the zombies are capable of and you know, their limitations kind of changes. You know, actually, they talk about it in the most recent issues. About how they're getting slower, you know,
because they've been dead longer and yeah, they're starting to dry out and that's another thing is we don't really have a clear sense of how much time has passed.
And it's about a year.
Well, I think on the one hand we don't really have a clear idea of how much time there was because they wouldn't either. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no working clocks anymore. You know, batteries in your watches are dead. If you've been winding them up the whole time, then you're going to know. But, you know, for the most part, you no longer have batteries. You no longer have working clocks. You're obviously not connecting to the atomic clock at the naval station.
The sun goes down.
Right.
So, I mean...
And you know it gets colder.
Right.
It gets warmer. So, you know, well, that was winter, obviously, because we had snow for a while. But, you know, beyond that, they don't have a sense of how much time has passed. So we don't have a sense of how much time has passed. So we don't really know exactly how long it's been. So we don't know how long the zombies have been out there.
I would say the writing style leads you into the emotions of the characters really well. I think
it's more about the people than the horror of the zombie outbreak.
Sure. I mean, if you're not paying attention to the writing, don't even bother. I mean, because that's you know...
If you're just looking for people to get their faces chewed off, this is the wrong book.
I mean, you're going to have that. Sure, you're going to see, you know, one guy get his... whole, you know, entire chest cavity torn apart by, you know, 50 zombies. And it's brutal and beautiful and ugly at the same time. But, you know, I mean, you gotta be into drama to like The Walking Dead.
Right.
You
know? And one of the more poignant moments of the series is where Rick is talking to a couple of the other people. And he says something about how, you know, those things out there, those dead things, like, this is their world. Mm-hmm. Like, Earth now belongs to them. They're the ones who are taking over. We are the weird ones. We're the ones on the outskirts. We're the ones on the fringe. And we only have a limited amount of time, and then we're gone. And right. humanity's going to be wiped out. So really, we are the walking dead. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that have a limited amount of time, limited amount of resources, and then we're gone.
Yeah, we're all going to turn into zombies eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Because in the storyline, you know, there's a couple instances where when they die, they still turn to zombies.
Even though they weren't bitten or right. whatever. It's just, you're dead, you come back to life.
And, you know, that brings the question, you know, what is this? Is it an airborne virus? Is this some genetic mutation gone wrong that, you know, actually alters the living?
Well, that's like the original Night of the Living Dead. They had a storyline for why the zombies came back.
Right.
And they kind of hint at it a little bit in the original movie, is that originally, scientists who were working on a satellite as part of a new weapons program with atomic energy, nuclear energy, it crashes, and the radiation brings the dead back to life. And then, after a while, as they were, you know, filming the movie and putting it together, they began to kind of realize that it works better if you don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah, and
I mean, to speculate, it's fine.
Because,
and, you know,
because why,
know,
why do you need to know? The only reason why you would need to know why it happened and how it happened is because you're going to solve the problem.
But they tease you in The Walking Dead because you've got the smart teacher who lies and pretends
right.
like he's a government scientist.
Right.
You know, and they start to lead into, well, you know, he knows.
Yeah, he's going to explain everything that happens.
Happened.
We got to get to Washington, D.C.
Right.
I got to find the bunker.
You kind of get excited. You know, you're like, oh, right, they're going to finally tell you. And then you... And, I had a hunch that he was a liar from the beginning. But it, part of me hoped that it was true, you know.
But I mean, the truth is, you don't need to know why it happened if you are not setting out to solve it.
Right.
You know, because it's not like they're going to make a cure. It's not like Rick is going to stumble into a high school chemistry lab and mix some sulfur and some borax together and create this mist that he's going to pour on the zombies and they all fall over dead and everyone's fine.
No.
That's never going to happen.
No.
So you don't need to know how it happened or why it happened. It's just, hey, guess what? The world sucks.
It is what it is.
And now we just got to deal with it. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the more recent issues. 75, mm-hmm. big milestone issue.
Right.
Came out. Actually, it only came out like 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago.
Now let's talk about it. How often do these issues come out again?
Well, they try to get out 12 a year, but that doesn't always happen. And sometimes you'll get... 3 in 2 months, mm-hmm. and then you'll have 2 months where you only get one, you know. And it's something, if you read the letters pages, I don't know if you read the letters
pages. Yeah, I do. I don't always make it all the way through it.
Right. But he does talk a lot about how they're trying to get out 12 issues. They try to stay to a monthly schedule. It doesn't always happen.
He always sounds so excited in the very beginning. It's, here's issue 75.
Hey, we got another issue done.
And, you know, and what I love is, you know, he'll be like, yeah, this one was a little long. Every other one, you know, there'll be a comment in there about, you know, how this one stretched a little longer than he had hoped.
Yeah, well, and to me, it reminds me of a good rock band. Mm-hmm. You know, because there are some rock bands who churn out an album
every year.
Yeah, and it's just another album. And I think, honestly, with comic books in general, being a monthly book can be a detriment mm-hmm. a lot of times to a character, like...
Because they have a deadline.
Well, yeah, like take Spider-Man, for instance, okay? They don't have a new issue.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, forget... Okay, Spider-Man's a bad example. Okay, let's take X-Men, okay? Uncanny X-Men. There's a new issue of Uncanny X-Men every month. Is that because every 30 days a writer says, oh, I've got this great X-Men story I've got to put down and we have to get it published and print it out there so people can read it? Or is it because every 30 days there has to be a new issue of Uncanny
right.
X-Men? So I think, you know, when you're stuck in that formula, it's like every 30 days, we have to get a book out. Then you end up with a book every 30 days because they had to make one every 30 days.
And it feels like it when you're
right.
reading it.
And he does them, you know, it's like sometimes it takes a little longer. Sometimes he bumps out three real quick because that's an artist. That's
well,
an artist telling his story.
And I think it's the pace of the story, too. You'll see that. It's like, for example, when the prison gets invaded
mm-hmm.
by the governor. And it gets real ugly. And the lead up to that, and then the denouement resolution at the end, goes real quick.
What was that word?
Denouement.
Uh-huh. Is that a real word?
Yes, it
you
is.
You just make that up right
Look
now.
Look it up, folks.
Can you spell
get out,
that?
Get out your old high school literature books.
Yes, spell that.
No.
But anyway, yeah, so, okay, so issue 50, Governor attacks.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is a sense where you can tell where, like, it was easier for him to expand and get stuff out quicker because of the pace of the story. But when you really get into the real deep drama, like when Lori's pregnant. See, I don't know how much we should talk about this because I don't want to disappoint our readers at the same time. For you new readers out there, cover your ears. But those experienced readers...
Earmuffs, people. If you haven't read it...
Earmuffs.
If you haven't read it, earmuffs for about a minute.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
But when Lori's pregnant and that whole transition of, you know, being in the prison and they're starting to get comfortable again and it looks like they're going to have a new life, you know...
She gives birth and all...
She gives birth. All of that leading right up to right before the governor comes, and then they have to escape, you know, and she gets shot and killed, we think. Who knows where they're going. I still have a little
question mark. She's gone. No,
I don't
she's
know.
Gone. No,
maybe the baby lives.
No, the baby is gone. The baby is definitely gone.
How do you know?
Because you can see it on the page.
They don't show the dead baby.
Yes, they do.
They do?
Yeah.
Well,
they show the bullets tearing her and the baby apart.
I thought it looked more like they showed her hunched over on the ground, on her belly, with the baby in her arms.
No, you see him ripping her and the baby in two.
Okay, yeah. Well, my point is, the really dramatic issues, they're going to stretch. You know, and there's a lot of words. A lot of words to read, folks.
Yeah, he has some issues where it's if you're looking balls to the wall action.
If you're looking for a picture book, this is not your thing.
I mean, sometimes you get that. Sometimes you get the issue where it's like they're running in, they're shooting stuff, they're grabbing stuff, they're getting somebody out of there. Get on the truck, quick, we gotta go. You know, plowing through, you know, crowds of zombies, making it out of there. But then you have those other issues where it's 32 pages of people talking about their problems,
right,
trying to figure out their relationships, and I don't have a problem with those issues.
No, because he's great at character building.
Yeah, he really is.
I mean, he can make a character out of anything.
And sometimes, you know, I have gotten some of the characters confused from time to time, you know, where it's, I'm like, wait a minute, that's the one who had the sister who, oh, no, wait, that was somebody else, you know. Mm-hmm. That happens sometimes.
Well, they die off so fast. It's hard to keep them all straight. Let's be honest, folks. If anybody out there knows everything verbatim that has to do with Walking Dead, I'd love to talk to you because you've got a mind like a steel trap. It's really hard.
And you're
to
also probably not drinking right now.
Yes. It's really hard to keep it all straight. You know, obviously you've got your main core of characters, and you know that's going to carry off. You know, I mean, I feel that, you know, Andrea and Rick, and
I, you know, I have to say that I think Rick and his son
Carl
are really the only ones who are safe. And for a long time, and I don't think Rick is 100% safe. I think Carl is.
I almost thought that when Rick got shot, you know, and he was laying there, and he was dying, and you saw Carl defending himself and trying to outsmart the zombies. I thought, okay, I could see this happening. I could see them killing off Rick.
I could see Rick. Carl, I think, is the only one who's really 100% safe, and I think Rick is probably 80% safe because I think Carl's too young to be a character on his own.
Have you found, though, what I've also noticed is he's built all these characters, and it's getting to the point now where he's holding on to him.
Right. Well, that's another thing I was just going to say, is that everyone else in the book has a 15% chance of survival.
Right.
And it's 15% just because you know their name and you know a little of their history. And that's the only thing that's going to keep them from being dead next issue. But if they die next issue, it's because they only had a 50% chance of being alive. Because the other 85% says, hey, it's a world full of zombies. And we haven't had a big mass death in the book for several issues now.
It's coming.
And he does that. Every so often he just cleans house.
Well, again, earmuffs. The whole part where, what's the name of the young guy in the very beginning who would go forage around Atlanta? I can't remember.
The Chinese guy.
Yes. He goes out on with
Glenn.
Glenn. Goes out on motorcycles with the other guy from the community.
Right.
And as they're driving off, those people that, you know, threw that body or that person as fodder.
Oh, you're talking in the latest issue.
Yes.
In 75.
Yes. When the other group finally escapes out of that building.
Right.
And throws their
Friend.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only way you got to be eaten.
That's wicked. Yeah. And let me tell you, if that ever happened to me, you better hope I die because I'm going to come find you. Oh, motorcycle right there. So right when that happens, they hear the motorcycles.
Right.
So what if I were to make a prediction, I say they're coming and they're armed, folks.
Well, of course.
So it's going to get bloody.
But that's another thing with the book. Let's talk about 75 for a minute. Is that, you know, when you had, I don't remember what happened in 25. I wonder if 25 is when they had to leave that first neighborhood. I don't remember. But I know issue 50 was the one, earmuffs, when they had to leave the prison, Lori died, the baby died, you know, clean house, people had to make a run for it, you thought Rick was going to die, you know, all of that stuff happened in issue 50. That was a big milestone issue, right? So issue 75 comes, and issue 75, there's no big event.
Right.
Like, the big event is that he goes up and he attacks the wife beater.
Sure.
And tries to get, it pulls out the gun on him, and pretends like he's going to shoot
him. Well, I think the big event there is how the governor, or not the governor, excuse me, the congressman is going to react. That was my thoughts. How is the congressman going to react to Rick?
But that's the thing, though.
In a basement somewhere,
right? It was much more of a mental event as opposed to a physical event.
Well, and that's how the writing style works: is it goes back and forth.
Right. So I was expecting issue 75 to be the issue where the zombies break through the wall, or somebody comes and finds them,
and that would have been a good placement because you would think, okay. Here was what I thought was going to happen. I thought they were going to be like, okay, Rick, we're going to imprison you. We're probably going to kill you.
Or Rick gets shot.
Right.
Or, you know, something.
And then right about that time when they're going to make their judgment on him, the zombies come.
Right.
And then somehow they're like, okay, here's a gun. Help us.
Right. So as you're building up to that issue and knowing that it's a milestone issue, you're expecting something like that to happen, and then it doesn't happen, which means that something about the events of that book are going to play a key. So something about the mental attitude of that book is what's going to play a key for the next year of the series, as opposed to, like with the prison,
right?
You know, with all of that stuff that changes right there. Well, but to be fair though, at the end of 75, we do get the alien invasion that's in full color, where the aliens come down and they attack the humans, and the humans get superpowers, and they have to fight back.
No, you don't believe that ending? No.
Oh, that's right, because in 76 he says that ending wasn't real.
Yeah,
right,
that would be really no. please, that would break my heart.
Yeah. So if you haven't read issue 75, there's a bonus bogus ending that he puts on the book with Tony Moore, the original artist, came back and they did like I think it was 10 pages or
that.
Something.
I missed that.
You didn't read that part?
No.
Oh, it's after the letters page.
Well, see, I didn't. I only read the letters a couple paragraphs. That's why I had this dumbfounded look.
Oh, you had no idea what I was talking about. Go back to issue 75.
I thought you were just, you know, speaking out the corner of your mouth.
Oh, no. Go back to issue 75.
Okay,
if you flip, because she hits Rick on the head with the rock.
Right.
Knocks him down. And he's like, why? Why did you do that?
Hello, darkness, and my then, old friend.
Well, here what happens is you read the letters page, and then he goes, at the bottom of the letters page, he says something like, oh, you didn't think that was really the end, huh? We still got 10 more pages for you. Huh. And you go to the next page, and it's in full color, and he's like, what's going on? And then these, like, UFOs appear, and they start abducting people off the planet.
Wow.
And as people die, they get, like, these superpowers, and they get reborn, and so it's like the superpowered humans fighting against the zombies, and the zombies are the alien army that's actually coming to enslave humanity. And so it's the superpowered humans versus the zombies. And they do, like, this big storyline thing. And then it comes back in issue 76, and the letters page in issue 76 says, you know, I knew most of you would be smart enough to know that was a joke. But there are a few of you who didn't quite get it.
Those of you that thought this wasn't a what if.
and it was just one of those, you know, he threw on there for fun. So that's what I was talking about. You didn't read that.
Yeah, I was completely clueless.
So yeah, issue 76, latest issue that came out. Let's see, what happened in the latest issue? He sits down, talks with the senator.
Yes, you. Well, what I was getting at was what really sparked my curiosity. It was how the congressman was going to react to Rick doing what he did. Because let's put that out there. He went a little nuts.
Yeah, he did. Well, but
sure, he was going after the wife beating, child beating guy.
Yeah, if I knew, like, even
but in I wasn't expecting him to draw his gun. You know, I thought for sure, you know, why don't just kick his butt?
Yeah, well, you know, he's got one hand. Can only fight so much.
Take your stub and just stub him to death.
And poke him in the eye.
Right.
But,
Yar.
He lost control.
And why does he get a hook?
That's a good question.
Or a spear. A spear point?
Yes.
Some like RoboCop spear.
Sure, yeah, I mean, you can get fashion something.
Stab people.
Maybe
get Ash's chainsaw. You
maybe
get
that's
chainsaw,
coming, yes. But, Army of Darkness thrown
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, exactly. But, so anyway, you find out that the senator was more upset with the fact that Rick questioned his authority as opposed to he broke the rules
sure.
and smuggled the gun.
Because I think deep down he knew that, sure, it was extreme.
But that guy had to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And they had not been dealing with him because they didn't want to deal with him.
And Rick's the guy to deal with
right.
situations.
Because they figure
to deal with.
He was a big guy. He was a good worker. Mm-hmm. He could go out and help build
doctor.
That wall.
He was a doctor.
He was a doctor. He had medical skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they needed him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to look the other way when he would beat up his wife and beat up his kid. Now, in my non-zombified world, if I knew my next-door neighbor was beating his kid and beating his wife, he'd be dead tomorrow, and maybe they could pin it on me, and maybe they couldn't. You know? But I'm not that worried about it.
Depends how much Dexter you've watched, I think.
Yeah, well, quite a bit yeah. on Blu-ray. looks really nice on Blu-ray. But,
I'll tell you what, one of my favorite things to do is, you know, I have a FOI card, and I like to read Walking Dead and to go to the firing range and shoot some paper.
Yeah, you well,
know?
You're definitely on my team when
that's
the
right. That's right.
Zombie getting
well,
happens.
You know what, that's the funny thing about this is you read these issues and you find yourself thinking, you know, because I commute a lot to
right.
work, and I'll find myself thinking about, okay, if it happens, what resources do I have?
It's yeah.
like, okay, I have a friend that's a manager at the health food store. And, you know, I'm a manager for a major
home improvement
and, store.
Right.
It's like, what would I do? What if?
You know, it's funny, but when my wife and I bought our house, I actually sat there one of the first nights I was in the house, and I thought, okay, if the zombie apocalypse happens, I've got the side door that I have to board up
yeah.
and the front window.
Picture window, yeah.
Yeah, and really beyond that, my house is pretty secure, you know? And if we need to make a run for it, the car in the garage, we've got a fence around the backyard. Mm-hmm. So if we need to make a run for it to get out to the car, we can climb out. We can grab the pool ladder, climb out the kitchen window, get to the garage, get in the car, and there's no problem. So I have thought about it. I have thought about zombie-proofing my house. And it's kind of funny when I think about it because, you know, if I had to sit down now, I know you own a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, oh, we got to get Aris.
Use it. And I
you know,
it.
So it's like randomly, I know somebody who's got a gun, who's got ammo, you know, mm-hmm. can do it. And so I know somebody who's got extra cars,
yeah.
you know, who's got, you know, SUVs. I know the people who have the vans. So,
right.
you know, you're going to try to get their vehicles involved. I know what supplies. I know a place to hit, you know, to get canned
and
goods.
Location. And location. You got to think about location.
Yeah.
Where am I going?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you think about something like one of these zombie apocalypse, and you're like, oh, they just happened to find somebody who was good at fencing, knew how to use a sword. But honestly, that's the person who would survive.
Oh, yeah.
The person who survives is the one who just randomly happened to have a handgun in their home, is the person who just happened
and
to take
I,
fencing
and I think
lessons.
That after the first zombie that you kill, you'd be fine with it.
Yeah, you get over it.
Yeah. you know, fight or flight.
Yeah, exactly. So so if we haven't reiterated it, I would like to add here again, Walking Dead is a good series.
Oh, it's an excellent series.
And
I think it's one of the best.
Here's a drink to Walking Dead. So. So what are we drinking now?
We switched. I ran out of Pabst. We've downgraded to Natty
so,
Light.
Wait, we downgraded from Pabst Blue Ribbon to Natural Light.
But that was I was lazy. I could have gone in the house and gotten something.
Is there a natural unlight? Do they make a natural?
It's not natural. There's nothing natural about that beer.
But is there a
I'm
natural
a home brewer,
beer?
And I can tell you there's nothing natural about Natural Light. It should be Undead Light. There
oh,
we
really?
Go. Ooh.
A natural
That'll
light?
Be my next beer that I'm going to brew.
Well, are you going to brew one for Halloween?
I've got a Scottish ale ready to go and some.
You need like an undead ale.
Well, I got my own hops, too.
Yeah?
Too. So, next batch will be with my hops.
Homegrown Living Dead Ale.
That's right.
Something like that.
Night
All right,
day.
So, yeah, Night of Living Ale.
Yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Walking Dead, I think, is also one of those where, like, you don't want to I would never recommend to somebody, oh, just start with issue 63.
No, you have to start from the very beginning.
Start from the very beginning.
It's like Lost.
Right. Yes, it's like very Lost. Much. You don't want to start with season 3 of Lost.
No, and, you know, if you're like me, I tried that and I got lost.
Well, and did you go back and watch?
No, I gave up. And I think that's what would happen to a lot of readers if you try to pick up, like, volume 3.
Right. Walking Dead is very... Because here's the other thing. Going back to the discussion we had about monthly comics, they're books that have to come out every month because that's their schedule, is monthly. Mm-hmm. And so they're always putting a jumping on point. I'm doing the quote things with my fingers. Right. Jumping on point. Because they're saying, if you haven't read the other ones, it doesn't matter. Start reading now. Mm-hmm. Whereas Walking Dead is really meant, you're supposed to read with issue 1 forward. And if issue 1 is sold out and it's expensive, they reprinted issue 1 like 2 months ago as a $1 comic.
Sure.
You know, you can pick up the trades. The trades are always going
to
be in print.
Well, hats off to the writer, too, and the fact that, you know, for example, with Marvel, they sit down every year and they discuss what they're going to do for the whole year. And you've got all these different, you know, arcs moving into each other. He doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
You know,
it's the story he wants to tell.
It's his liberty, you know.
So. Now, here's the other thing, though. Is he's got a second series, and I think we're going to have to read up on this one for the next one. He has a second series called Invincible. It's a superhero book from the same writer.
I've got them on my droid. I'll have to read them at work.
Okay, well, because I've got a whole bunch of them also.
I think I only have 7 and 8, so you need to fill me in on the rest.
7 and 8?
Yeah, I only have 7 and 8.
Okay, well, they're up to like 74, I think, was the latest.
Okay,
issue,
folks, so we'll be talking about Invincible in about a month.
It's about the same as Walking Dead, so... but that's another thing where it's his take on superheroes and his superhero book. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I don't want to say too much to, you know, give things away to you. But it's, again, one of those things where he didn't have to worry about anyone else dealing with his character. There were no crossovers. He had
Is the artistry consistent? Like, the art in Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It's the same guy, right?
No. There's two guys. The first guy was there for like the first year or so, and then they brought in a second guy, and he's been there ever since.
Okay.
And I think with Invincible, I think it's been the same. I think it's the same penciler. There may have been a different inker at one point, but otherwise, yeah, it's been consistent throughout. Yeah. So that's another good series. So maybe we'll talk about Invincible next time if we can read through. All that stuff. I might have to try to hunt down a trade or two in the middle.
Well, and I want to throw Sword in there next time, too.
Sword?
Sword.
Now, there are two Sword series.
Yeah, not to be confused with the one that...
Marvel.
Ended, yes.
Marvel just had one that went 6 issues, 5 issues, and just ended.
This is different.
Now, what is... Have you read any of Sword?
I read the very first issue. I bought the trade.
What's the first issue?
The first issue is basically a young woman... in a nutshell, sitting down at the dinner table, some people bust in and question the father, where's the sword? And they're real intent about finding the sword. And basically they kill everybody, think they kill the daughter. The daughter falls through the floor, and there's the sword in the crawl.
And she has no idea?
No idea what's going on.
Okay.
So it's a big jump, the first issue. I'm excited to read about the rest.
And that's from the Luna Brothers, I believe?
Yes, the Luna Brothers, yep.
They also did a series called Girls that was all about naked chicks.
And that's fine with me.
And it was actually pretty good. So, So maybe next time we'll talk Invincible, we'll talk Sword, and we'll have to find... And then I think we've got one other graphic novel. It's called The Night Owls.
Okay.
And it's from Zuda, which is another imprint of DC. And it's basically like a comic strip that someone did online that's been collected into a book.
So, you know, we're going to do our homework because, you know, we're reading this stuff
for you.
For you. Because, you know, we all get stuck in our ruts. We all like our special characters. You know, I'm a Deadpool nut. You know, anything Deadpool.
Even though he's got like 9,000 different series going on.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get into that because we could be talking for another hour about my likes and dislikes. But, we're trying to offer you an opportunity to hear a little bit about the off-the-cuff stuff that you don't normally see on the shelf, and what we've felt about it, and, you know, quite honestly, whether or not it's worth picking up on the shelf or not.
So these books are not going to read themselves. This beer is not going to drink itself. So this is a public service
Yes. We're working hard for you.
Us for you. So, one last drink here. We'll do a little...
Cheers.
I don't know if you can hear that aluminum thunk.
We're going to get bottles next and, time.
And so, thanks for listening, everybody.
This thank you.
This is the first episode of Comaholics, and we'll see you guys next time.
Adios.